Welcome back to another episode of M&A Access. My name is Ekaterina, and today I'm here in the studio with Tommy Mixon. You are a strategic risk advisor and private equity at IMA Financial Group. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for visiting me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is very cool. It's a great setup.
Yes, thank you. So for those who don't know who you are, share a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I'm a career insurance person, which is not the most exciting way to kick this off. But I'm from Georgia, grew up in Georgia, went to Georgia, go Dogs. And my dad owned a billboard company when I was a kid. And I got to Georgia and I kind of thought maybe I'd go work with him or do something like that. And he called me when I was at school and he said, hey, I sold the company. I sold it. So you got to figure out how to get a job. So I went over to the business school and I asked them what major got the most jobs. And they said that the risk management and insurance degree had a 93% job placement rate upon graduation. I was like, that sounds good. Sign me up for that. I think I can be top 93% of anything. So ultimately, my Dallas connection was I got an internship at what was Wells Fargo Insurance. At that time, came out here, did that, learned about, you know, what it is I do now, production, business development, kind of guiding companies through their commercial insurance renewals, things like that. And their feedback was to go and work on the underwriting side and learn the insurance part of the business. So I finished school. And I got a job with AIG. So I started with AIG actually in Houston, which was, if we're counting, the second time I moved to Texas. And then shortly after that, they moved me to New York City. So while I was at AIG, I was underwriting. It's funny, I was looking at the notes before this, and I never decided to get into private equity. What happened was I showed up at AIG and they said, you're going to underwrite private equity portfolio companies. That's what you're going to do. I was like, great. Sounds good. So got to New York, worked there for a while, and then later went to Chubb. Became a senior underwriter and worked with on deals for KKR, Blackstone, New Mountain Capital, Advent, Carlyle, and everybody else who was buying companies. Which was really kind of a masterclass on, you know, getting on schedule with deals, learning how to service private equity transactions through the lens of commercial insurance, and ultimately had an opportunity to come back to Dallas in 2021, third and I think final time I have moved to Texas. My wife and I had some kids, and now we're stuck here. So that's a little bit about how I got here.
Okay. How did you end up at IMA Financial Group?
So Jordan Rosen, so shout out Jordan. She and I had actually competed on deals in the past when I was at my old shop and she was here at IMA. Jordan's our national head of private equity who sits in Dallas and has kind of architected this great team that we have. And I remember, you know, I've been in the insurance business for 10 years and the first time I heard of IMA was me losing an extremely large deal that I was competing on to IMA a few years ago. So that was actually my first interaction with the team. And, you know, ultimately, Jordan and I had met through AMNAA. We had a friendly relationship and ultimately got to know each other. And, you know, they had an opportunity for somebody to come over and focus on business development in the private equity space and utilize all the great resources we have. So I jumped to that opportunity. And it's funny that we're doing this today. Today is actually my 1 year anniversary here.
That's awesome. So you mentioned a little bit about the companies you have worked for previously. Mm-hmm. What kind of clients or deals did you start with early in your career?
Yeah, so it was interesting. It was a really, so 15, 16, all the way through 2021, you know, large private equity firms were extremely active and still are. So when I started my career, again, I was working with, you know, the large internationally known private equity firms that were buying companies, you know, every couple of days. And what I realized, the opportunity I saw when I came to Dallas is, as you guys probably know, there's, you know, depending on what list you read, there's 100, 200, sometimes 400 private equity firms, you know, in the Metroplex, and that can encompass family office, private equity, independent sponsors, and then, you know, the occasional fake private equity firm, which I've run into in the past. Anyway, what I realized was that, you know, the KKRs of the world, they have a system for how they buy insurance, what it covers, how much it costs, and how they implement that in their portfolio companies. And that was something that was not happening in the lower middle market when I got here. So when I saw the opportunity to kind of leverage the experience I got working in New York here in the Metroplex, because, you know, even these smaller private equity firms, they've got, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 portfolio companies. And there's an economy of scale that can be created there that, frankly, a lot of folks still have not tapped into, but I'm working on them. So,
What was the biggest adjustment, or maybe a learning curve, when transitioning into your new role?
It's interesting because, you know, having technical experience does not make a good salesperson. Mm-hmm. So there's two. There's transitioning to IMA, and then previously just transitioning to the broker side of the business. For me, it was not being afraid to embarrass myself and look stupid. I literally remember getting here in, you know, May of 2021 and like running around uptown in a suit on, like actually knocking on doors of private equity firms, trying to get meetings with people, which is funny because some of those people are like clients now, which is awesome. But anyway, the learning curve, I think, was, you know, in any business-to-business sales role, I think you have a lot of freedom as to how you architect that business. So the biggest learning curve for me was like figuring out how to productively manage my time and what activities and what partnerships were a good use of that time and what weren't. So, 5 years of doing this in Dallas now, there's, if you want to talk offline about some things that I think maybe aren't such a good use of time, I'm happy to share those thoughts with you. But that was the biggest learning curve for sure, was just, you know, clicking over from clock punching kind of salary underwriter guy to, you know, 100% commission, figure it out, mm-hmm. get them in the door and do a good job. And it was slow at first and then it was fast. Mm-hmm. So it was great.
So let's talk about deals. What does a typical deal look yep. like to you?
So I would say, you know, for us, we're looking at, we have two angles with our diligence team, and we really focus on diligence, right? We want to get into the data room. We want to tear apart the insurance program. We want to set up an insurance program that works with the investment thesis of the company before close, especially if it's a new platform. As far as the size, I would say $10 million in EBITDA, around there, you know, sometimes below, sometimes above. And a lot of times it's a family-owned, founder-led business that, you know, a private equity firm is buying and they're transacting for the first time. So, and it's funny, you know, I go to the AM&A conferences and I talk to people all the time, and that, you know, mantra is really something that a lot of them are looking for. So what we find is, you know, they're buying a family-owned air conditioning company in, you know, Tyler, Texas or wherever. And whatever insurance program they have is fine for that, for a family-owned business in Tyler, Texas. But it's not fine for a new platform that you're going to invest, you know, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars into and buy companies in Oklahoma and Georgia and Florida and Mississippi and Louisiana, because insurance company appetites vary by state. So we have to, you know, get in sync with the equity firm and map out, you know, the coverage and where they're going to be buying these companies to make sure we can put together a program that makes sense, because we've gotten opportunities this way where, you know, the incumbent brokers on even an existing platform didn't do that. And they'll go, you know, spend $25 million on an add-on and they have to shut the company down on the first day because they can't get auto insurance. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that we really seek to avoid.
Mm-hmm. And now you have been with IMA for about a year.
1 year.
1 year, yes. Mm-hmm. And what surprised you the most about M&A and insurance world when you first entered it?
Yeah, so I'll say for IMA, I came over, I had a nice book in my old shop. I had done well. I was doing a lot of execution work myself. And I think part of what makes us unique is, you know, our diligence teams are and I tell them this all the time, they're literally like insurance ninjas. And the way we handle a project when it comes in, you know, LOI gets signed. Usually they'll kick off QE, kick off legal, and then they'll call us. And, you know, our team is going to be involved from like the day that they drop into the data room and start analyzing all the way to post-close execution. It's the same people. Nobody's getting, you know, caught up on, you know, what's the name of this company again or anything like that. Like the people that are involved in the deal from day one are going to remain involved throughout the life of the client with IMA. They told me that when they got me to come over, and I thought, well, I hope it's like that. And then I got here and it's been even better than I could have imagined. So the execution piece and the ability of the team to do a great job, even on a small add-on or you know, taking a look at some one-off deals is really impressive.
Well, sounds like you had a really strong year so far at the IMA. What helped you succeed?
Again, not to be a broken record, but our team. You know, whether it's employee benefits, property and casualty, surety bonding, rep and warranty insurance, you know, whatever it is that the client needs, their ability to execute and keep all the trains running on time as someone marches towards close has continued to be the difference maker.
Mm-hmm. Are there any mistakes that ended up being very valuable to you?
I've made so many mistakes. Like, I mean... Even as recently as, you know, the past couple of weeks, you know, there are deals that, you know, I thought that we could execute on or we're going to, you know, win that, you know, for whatever reason, they fell through the cracks. For me, it's become more about spending time with our clients and prospective clients, developing real relationships with them. You know, not even intentionally, but through the nature of our work, it's extremely complicated. It's tedious. Insurance is not something that a lot of people get excited about. You know, through those processes, you get really to know your clients well on a personal level, and they become your friends. So I don't know if this is answering your question about what mistakes have I made. I don't even know where to start on mistakes that I've made. One time I tried to do a bowling event. That was a waste of time. It was horrible. But we could.
But that sounds fun.
I thought
bowling
it did.
Bowling event?
No one else thought it sounded fun. Nobody came.
Why?
But I don't know. That's the other thing I learned is through trial and error. And this was not, you know, recently. This was several years ago. But, you know, as you try to differentiate yourself from other other brokers and other competitors, you know, you want to get to know people, you want to, you know, do happy hour or dinners or whatever. But that specific one stands out to me because, I mean, literally like three people showed up. And I mean, we had a good time, but it was extremely awkward. And what I learned was that hosting events, which you guys know a lot about, is not easy, and it requires a ton of follow-up and diligence and staying on people and making sure they know where it is and how to park and when to show up. And so, you know, we try, and I'll pivot here a little bit to what's worked. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to introduce our clients and our prospects to, you know, people that may help them with their business. And what I mean by that is, if you look at, like my dad told me this thing one time, basically, if you can, essentially boiling it down to, you know, if you help people get what they want, you'll get what you want. And usually with private equity firms, they've got one or two problems, you know, sometimes at the same time, which is they're trying to raise money and are looking for capital, or they're trying to deploy their capital and trying to find companies to buy. So the thing that has really worked for me is spending a lot of time, and it does take time, you know, trying to connect the private equity firms I know and have relationships with investment bankers that I know and have relationships with, or individual business owners that I know and have relationships with that ultimately want to transact at some point. And I think those introductions and spending a lot of time doing events catered around that has ultimately been a lot more productive and led me to where I am right now.
Mm-hmm. What makes IMA approach to insurance and M&A world different from others?
Yes, that's a great question. There's a couple of different things. So one of the things we have that is a differentiator, I've talked a lot about our team. So there's that. And just for your background, so IMA, 3,000 employees, $1 billion in revenue. One of the things that really differentiates us is every employee within the company has stock. We are a private company, and we issue stock to our employees every year on an annual basis. That's been going on since the 1970s. So we're privately held, and we're passionate about that. And, you know, employees get a sense of ownership, you know, when they actually have shares in the company they're working at. And that creates kind of that next level service and that white glove experience that we want to give to our clients, is that everybody has ownership in the result of any deal. So we're all competitive and we all want to win.
So what do you enjoy the most about the work you do?
I love deals. Working on transactions, even from the insurance perspective, ignites a passion in me. I'm excited to kind of be in the boat with my clients and my friends as they look to acquire a company, helping them either, you know, fix whatever insurance program is in place, or sometimes saving them money, or doing, getting some sort of good, you know, outcome is always great. But, you know, the being a part of the M&A space is what's exciting to me. And then I would be remiss if I didn't also talk about the fact that, again, I have two young children, and my hope is to give them and my wife a great life. So those two things are certainly what keeps me going.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a great success client story that you can share with us that left a major impact on your career?
Private equity firm here in Dallas. They, you know, same kind of story as a lot of deals, you know, got to know each other over a couple of years, looked at some stuff, you know, didn't really go anywhere. And then, you know, ultimately when I transitioned to IMA, I got a phone call that was, you know, hey, like, you know, what's going on? We've got some serious problems. And they had three portfolio companies, all of them on different insurance renewal cycles, to the point where they were kind of like dealing with insurance for the whole year, which is, no one wants to do that. So what ended up happening was, you know, we dove in, we created an entire new insurance program for them, which is, again, this is three portfolio companies, is property and casualty and employee benefits. We also ultimately ended up saving them like 30% and improved their coverage. So it was a significant benefit to their cash flow. So that was just one. And we've, you know, that's happened a time or two, but 30% was a big number.
Mm-hmm. And this might be an obvious question, but why is insurance such an important part of an M&A transaction?
So we always say that, insurance isn't going to kill a deal, but it can change the economics of a deal. One of the ways that insurance can kind of negatively affect private equity transactions, we've talked a little bit about this already with, you know, making sure that coverage is available in the states that you're going to buy add-ons in and things like that. But insurance policies don't line up with, you know, when you want to close. In my experience, it's almost never a good time. So it's particularly a heavy lift. But one of the things to look out for is, we're going to go really deep into insurance weeds here. So I've just cautioned for the listeners. So general liability insurance policies are auditable. And what that means is they're rated based on the sales of the company. So if your company does $20 million in sales, you pay X. If it does $40 million in sales, you'd pay, you know, 1.5x or whatever. So in this particular case, I was in the data room. You know, we got the target company. We're working for the private equity firm. And the insurance policy is saying that the sales are $20 million, $27 million, actually, I remember. In the audited financial statements, they're $39 million. So this is an auditable insurance policy that is, I think it was like $800,000 a year or something like that. So you're looking at a significant ding coming up. And, you know, we called them and we were like, hey, just so you know, you're closing on this business in July or whenever they closed. And the insurance policy is going to renew in October. And when that happens, you're going to be the new owner of this company and you're going to get a bill for $170,000 that you have to pay. So just a heads up. Like, you might want to do something about that, you know, and that was kind of actually, you know, a really good experience, because we're getting engaged to tell them that stuff. Like, that's the point. right? If you want somebody to sell you and tell you how you're great and take you to play golf all the time and be your insurance guy, we're not that, you know? And that's one of the reasons I like working with private equity too, is that that level of sophistication is already there. They're not interested in being sold. They're interested in, hey, where are the boogeymen in the closet and how do I get them out? So in that case, what ultimately happened was they adjusted the EBITDA, and which was as kind of close to close, and they got agreement out of it, and they found out, you know, that's something a lot of business owners do, is they underreport sales and they think they're saving money on their insurance, and then they just pay the audit premium at the end of the year. So ultimately the deal closed, we made the adjustment, they paid the bill, everything was fine. But those situations, I mean, you're talking about, you know, $170,000 at a 6x, like that's a lot of money.
That is a ton of money. That's a scary amount of money.
Yeah, especially just because, you know, it was just how they did their insurance.
Yes.
No one was looking at it.
Yeah, wow. And if someone in private equity and M&A world had to remember one thing about the insurance, what would it be?
Call us early. Mm-hmm. It takes time. It's hard. Most of the people that we work with, you know, they're buying blue-collar services, industrial services, manufacturing, you know, food-related businesses. All of these entities are very profitable. That's why they're investing in them. But, you know, the more trucks and warehouses and machinery and employees that a company has, the more significant their insurance spend is going to be. And it takes a lot of time to there, because in every, like I told you when I worked at AIG and Chubb, you know, there's a private equity group in all of the major insurance companies separate from the traditional underwriters. So what we do is we're going to go to all of those people and be like, look, this is a live deal. This is what we're doing. This is what we think it should cost. You know, that's a long negotiation. And so the more time we have on the insurance side, the more money we're ultimately going to be able to save the client and the better coverage we're going to get. Insurance is not an industry that's known for moving fast. It's not. I'm sure you've dealt with that on your own personal insurance. I'm sure you've just that we have that reputation. So, you know, when the LOI gets signed and you think a deal is going to go, it really makes sense to call us and spool up our team.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the current market, what are some challenges that you're seeing in providing coverage for private equity deals?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is unique to any insurance broker and not unique even to individuals, but commercial auto insurance is not going well. And it's funny, we had the president of the Hartford Insurance Company at our producer summit, and I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, we've had a hard market, right? Which means, you know, consecutive quarters of premium growth to the customers, right? So we've had this hard market in the auto insurance space for years. You know, when do you see some relief coming? And he said, I don't. He said the number of auto insurance claims that come into our office now with a lawyer already attached to them, just prepared to sue a business owner because they got hit or hit a truck with a company name on it, is through the roof. So all of the money that the insurance companies are losing, not all of it, but a significant portion of the money they're losing on auto insurance is a result of all the litigation surrounding the commercial entities that they insure. That's why the rates keep going up, because they continue to get smoked on those, you know, $1, $3, $5 million limits. A lot of that just goes to defense costs and attorney fees.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ultimate settlement.
Mm-hmm. Are there any trends you're excited about? Anything maybe with AI?
Yes. So we have some pretty unique AI tools within IMA that have taken a lot of the, you know, I would say rote work off the desks of our team, which enables them to continue doing more awesome work. There are tools out there that can, you know, read insurance policies and poke holes in them. There are tools that can, you know, analyze, you know, market placements and figure out even which individual underwriter within a company is going to be the best fit for, you know, let's use the air conditioning example again, for an HVAC business or whatever. So I'm excited. You know, there's always the threat of, and I actually was with an AI company the other day, we had lunch, and I asked him, I was like, do you think I'll, like, am I getting replaced? Like, how much time do I have? I got a number I want to hit, and I need this much time to get to it. And then if it goes away, okay. And he said, no, he said, I think people in business development, people in sales, you know, the rainmakers of the world, they'll always be all right. So there is that kind of double-edged sword with the AI stuff. Is these tools are fascinating, and we have them and we use them a lot, and they certainly augment our service offerings. But you know, it is scary too, because you know, you don't want to lose jobs.
That's true to a robot.
Right.
And with that, how do you see everything with MA, you know, insurance side of it evolve over the next few years?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the sophistication is coming to the lower middle market. I think that, you know, a lot of these firms, and even still in Dallas, I mean, there's new private equity firms popping up every single day or every other day on my LinkedIn of, hey, we left here and we raised a bunch of money and now we're going to do this and we're going to go buy companies. And I think that that is that increase in the market and increase in presence here. I think more and more people are having negative insurance experiences on deals. If you talk to private equity guys, you know, I spend a lot of time with them. And I think that, you know, their main challenge is always finding the right deal, finding a good company to buy. There's and everybody, even last night, we were with some folks and, you know, deal flows up. The quality is a little bit better. They're excited about the next couple months and everything like that. And that's great. But, you know, the change I see as it relates to insurance is I think a lot more people are going to add IMA or, you know, another insurance broker, but preferably IMA, to their kind of list of like their value creation plan and what they're going to do in diligence on any company. Because I've talked to people that, you know, manage hundreds of millions of dollars and buy lots of companies. And they said, you know, we just kind of let the insurance be its own thing. We leave it with the owner. It's kind of an afterthought. And I think that's changing. I think as, you know, margins get tighter, you know, we could talk about the exit overhang. We could talk about struggles raising LP money. I mean, I think every deal, you know, every dollar you can eke out of it is important. And, you know, I think that a lot of people have certainly left money on the table by just ignoring their insurance, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. And I have a fun question for you.
Oh, great.
Do you have a podcast, book, or routine that helps you to be the successful man you are?
Thank you. So, I'm Catholic. I converted when my wife and I got married. So I would say that our faith is extremely integral in that. It's kind of like the spinal cord for our family. I mean, we've got, you know, two little kids. We, you know, hopefully we'll have more. And, you know, it can be really chaotic between, you know, me being out or flying, going to conferences, travel, whatever. And my wife kind of running the house at home, Claudia, shout out to Claudia. You know, I think our practice of Catholicism is really grounding for us. And I would say that.
Well, thank you, Tommy, for your time. Where can people connect with you and find out more about the work you do for IMAA?
Thank you. I like to think I'm pretty easy to get in touch with. but yes, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is great. You can email me. My email is on my LinkedIn. And please reach out. We'd love to take a look, help, or, you know, try to connect you with some people and increase that deal flow. So
absolutely. Thank you, Tommy, for visiting me today.
Thank you
for your time.
This is great.